This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Thursday, April 18th, 2024. I'm Caleb Brown. When a fiscal crisis hits, history suggests the policy response will be terrible. For a variety of basic economic reasons, it's better to simply avoid the crisis. The unsustainability of the federal budget is a long time in the making, and there are ways to avoid this fiscal doom loop that is currently looming. But acting sooner than later is key. Cato's Ryan Bourne details his new Cato paper out today. I can remember the mid-90s. Ryan, you might have been a little too young for this, but we talked about deficit reduction. And when you reduce deficits, essentially what you are doing is slowing the rate at which you are accumulating debt. This is not how normal human beings think about it, but there is just a lot wrong with the debate that we have about spending, borrowing, and taxing on the specific issue of the gap between what we spend and what we tax. Help us understand just broadly how you see it.
Well, the federal budget deficit is historically extremely high at the moment. On current policy, annual deficits will grow to about $2.6 trillion per year over the next decade. And actually, if you look at 2023 as an example, once you account for kind of one-off budget shenanigans, we borrowed around $2 trillion. That's about 7.4% of GDP. Now, that might not sound, you know, be meaningful to most people, but that was the highest level of borrowing relative to the size of the economy outside of recessions or wars since the 1930s. We're borrowing dramatic amounts for kind of peacetime and being outside of acute recessions. And that comes on top of a period where we've borrowed vast amounts to deal with the financial crisis because of COVID-19 and ongoing structural deficits, the gap between day-to-day government spending and revenue. So you add this all up, and we're still borrowing vast amounts on top of a debt level that is about the highest that it's been since the aftermath of World War II. So we're in really kind of unprecedented territory, with the next few decades set to get even worse due to promises made to elderly populations in terms of promises for Social Security and Medicare. So this is a really unprecedented situation.
There's a strong moral case to not doing this. As you see it, what is that case broadly? Understanding that making a moral case for something and making a political case for something are quite often at odds.
There's a kind of moral case in the sense of intergenerational fairness, you know, future taxpayers being burdened with the costs of providing things to individuals today. But, you know, my paper actually doesn't go into that so much. My paper tries to look from a practical perspective at what is the kind of underlying economic case for deficit reduction? Because we can all look at the figures and look at the projections and say, well, that's terrible. But, you know, why is it that we worry about vastly blowing up debts? And I think there are three kind of key reasons why we should be engaging in deficit reduction today. The first is as insurance against an acute fiscal crisis. Nobody knows when a fiscal crisis would happen, but we're raising the risk of it with so little focus on the debt. Now, I think some people kind of don't acknowledge how damaging a full-blown fiscal crisis would be. We could have a period in which all of a sudden those who lend to the federal government demand much higher bond yields. That would feed directly into a higher deficit. That extra borrowing would then drive up yields further. We'd end up in some sort of fiscal doom loop. And you combine that with a growing sense that the government might eventually lean on the Federal Reserve to print new money to fund the government, risking higher inflation. And I think you risk a steep decline in the dollar as money, you know, flees from dollar-denominated assets. So, you know, a fiscal crisis would be really, really ugly, and we want to avoid that outcome. Secondly, though, policymaking in a crisis tends to be terrible. When you think back to many of the things that happened during the Great Depression, some of the things that happened in the aftermath of the Great Recession with bailouts, and then the COVID-19 pandemic, where you saw governments doing all sorts of weird things justified by a crisis. If we wait until the moment a crisis actually hits, then policymaking will be a mess. In that moment of panic, policymakers won't carefully ponder the microeconomic implications of their reforms. What they'll likely do is reach for some degree of wealth expropriation, have the Federal Reserve print more money, or take easy options, what are perceived as easy options, to raise certain damaging taxes or cut investment programs, because they're easier to do than fundamentally rethinking like the major government programs. So policymaking in a crisis would be terrible. And then finally, even if you think that those outcomes are unlikely, high debt has been shown in a number of studies to be associated with slower economic growth. And that can be highly, highly damaging over a long period of time. So you add up these three factors. And I think, you know, even if the numbers in and of themselves don't scare you, I think there are good economic reasons why we should be engaging in deficit reduction today.
You mentioned a real fiscal crisis and people finding that to be unlikely. But whether or not you view COVID-19 or the financial crisis of 2007-08 as a fiscal crisis, the government sure treated them as if they were fiscal crises. Point being that the threshold for what could trigger terrible government policy is actually probably lower than you or I might believe.
Yeah. I mean, whenever a crisis of any type arises, we tend to see vast interventions into the economy, whether that was the Great Depression and you had, you know, lots of industrial policy and price and entry controls imposed in industries. The Great Recession, obviously, we saw the huge bailouts of the financial sector. COVID-19, we saw vast new impositions in terms of our ability to socialize with lots of new laws, emergency laws passed. But what I'm really getting at here is the fact that I think if you're making fiscal policy in a crisis, inevitably politicians will not want to cut government programs that they think their voters depend upon. And so it will be very, very tempting for them to engage in some sort of, you know, wealth expropriation or leaning on the Federal Reserve to finance the government, which might be less harmful to them politically in the short term, but would manifest in big problems longer term in the sense of making the US a less reliable place to invest your money or risking much higher inflation over a longer period, which can be very damaging in the longer term.
So that's all very bad news, Ryan.
Yeah, I mean, it is very bad news. And I think the reason why we're likely to get more of an audience for thinking about this question now is that the fact that US government borrowing costs are now much higher than they were prior to the pandemic means that even people that were relaxed about running up debt through the 2010s are now realizing that there could be a big problem here. So let's put this into context. Just look at the 10-year treasury yield as an example of the cost of government borrowing. That's now 4.6% today. It was actually only 4.2% when the paper was written. That's about 90% above the average level seen through the 2010s. So government borrowing is becoming more expensive. It's becoming more expensive to issue new government debt. But at the same time, you know, a lot of the existing debt that we have, as those treasuries mature and we have to refinance that debt, are now being refinanced at higher interest rates. So, you know, even aside from, you know, everything that we've been saying, government borrowing costs going up and government debt over the long run is extremely sensitive to these interest rates. I think, you know, even economists that were relaxed about running up debt and thought the capacity to run up debt was very high through the 2010s are now recognizing that there could be a big problem here. And, you know, the US government is pretty unique when you look across OECD countries in not having any kind of meaningful budgeting framework or deficit rules to try and constrain deficits. Neither presidential candidate seems particularly interested in this issue. Almost all of the things that they talk about would blow up the amount of red ink from the federal government. So I think there's a perception here that on the numbers, the US has a problem. And politically, the US has a problem in that nobody appears in Washington willing to deal with it.
So Ryan, when I said that was bad news, I did not then expect you to give me worse news. That is, in fact, worse news, that there does not seem to be any kind of appetite to actually dealing with this problem head on. What would a serious option here look like?
Well, I think in an ideal world, we do something like Romina Boccia, our colleague here at Cato, is proposing, and have a big fiscal commission focused on a major program of spending-based deficit reduction that would incorporate major reform of entitlement programs. And, you know, to ease the adjustment, you'd also want a lot of pro-growth regulatory policies to try and grow the economy more quickly to reduce the extent to which you had to reduce deficits through spending restraint. Now, that doesn't seem to be on the table at the moment. So I think the next best option, if you've got politicians who are not willing to touch those major entitlement programs, is to go through and to try to cut wasteful and economically harmful spending. We lay out a range of potential cuts in the paper that add up to about $500 billion per year, things like eliminating farm subsidies, rescinding some of the Inflation Reduction Act climate tax credits, and devolving a host of other spending to the states. Now, if policymakers are not even willing to do that, I think the least that they could do is introduce what we're describing in the paper as a living will or a fiscal resolution plan, which basically brings together a bipartisan committee of representatives and senators along with the Department of Treasury and says, okay, if a fiscal crisis were to hit, these are the sorts of options that we would consider for eliminating the deficit net of interest payments, about $750 billion per year. I think that's the very least we should expect, that if a fiscal crisis does hit, you know, we'd have some thought out plans that had microeconomic justification for why those things should be cut.
This is similar to what states have done facing pension crises, which is to say, get all the relevant people into the room, make them aware of the set of facts that are fast approaching, and make a decision about what's going to happen when things go south. None of those options seem particularly likely, Ryan.
Maybe not, but you know, the point of our work at a think tank is to try and make the politically impossible possible by outlining options that we think policymakers should pursue. And you know, I think that the key point here is that what can't go on won't, and our current debt projections are unsustainable. It's not just us saying this. You know, if you look at the Penn Wharton model of the macroeconomy, it presumes that the country has 2 decades in which to sort this issue. Otherwise, we will reach a point at which some sort of default, explicit default on debt or implicit default with the Federal Reserve monetizing the debt becomes inevitable. So, you know, that might sound like a long time, 2 decades, but each year that you delay starting down payments towards fixing this issue, the greater it becomes and the greater the risks as well. Because as we've seen, government borrowing costs have jumped pretty sharply in the past couple of years. And that in itself has a big impact on the debt projections over a 30, 40, 50-year period.
Do you think that could spur some action, that alone? Because at some point you're talking about, you know, higher borrowing costs. You're either talking about more taxes or more borrowing, which means, and if you do choose more borrowing, as you mentioned, that could mean higher borrowing costs.
Well, I think if we saw a period in which government interest costs were sustained much higher than they were expecting, then at some stage, this becomes forced on policymakers to do something. Like already, we're talking this year about a point where net interest payments from the federal government will exceed defense spending. And I believe within a decade, they will exceed defense spending by about 36%. So that sort of statistic, I think, can help focus minds that this is an increasingly large proportion of the federal budget and a big risk going forward for the budget outlook.
Ryan Bourne occupies the R. Evan Scharf Chair for the Public Understanding of Economics at the Cato Institute. His new paper is out today. Subscribe to and rate the Cato Daily Podcast anywhere you like. Thank you for listening.